Hello and welcome to the Beginner's Handbook. I'm Jordan.
I'm Jamie.
And in this episode, we are going to talk about creating or building your own style in your tabletop games, whether that's D&D, Call of Cthulhu, whatever they may be.
Yeah, so again, although normally on like the channel or, you know, the podcast, like if you're listening to it elsewhere, we'll kind of mainly talk about Dungeons & Dragons, but we are going to be talking in a kind of cross platform, if you like, sort of case in this particular time, and in general a lot of what we talk about, even if it does, well, we are mentioning D&D specific terms, it is going to relate to other systems as well.
Yeah, so I think then what that means is, before we even start, just as usual, we'll just ask you guys a couple of questions first. I think the first one would be for the players out there, what's your favourite style of game that you would like normally play? Are you a horror person? I'm a horror person when I play games. Or do you prefer something more high fantasy, low fantasy, high or low sci-fi, whatever it may be? And if you're a GM, what sort of styles do you like to run? But in particular, it'd be interesting to hear the different style of GM that you either play with or run as. Certainly, there's different groups that I play with that some are super into RP. Some are happy to RP, but they're happy to kind of almost distance themselves from their character a wee bit and just having a bit more fun, you know, and skipping through certain elements of games.
Yeah.
Just curious to hear what yourselves and your styles are like for the people that are listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you are listening and or watching us on YouTube, you can let us know comments underneath there, and there's other social media channels that we'll have linked underneath or in the descriptions, wherever you're picking that up. So it's Facebook, it's Twitter, there's Discord there, and Instagram if you want to be different.
Yeah, so I think then what that leads us on to is just exactly what do we mean by style? And there's two things we really mean by that, and the questions we've just asked might give it away. But in particular, when I say style of games, what we are referring to is, you know, style, the genre of it, basically. So is it a horror game? Is it an action game? Is it a mystery? Is it something more puzzle-based? Or is it something rules light? That could be a style of game you like to play, and they could obviously sit within any genre, but it is also a very different style of play that I personally really enjoy. I've got a whole bunch of rules light games that I play, particularly because if somebody's new to role-playing games, I cannot be bothered to teach them D&D a lot of the time. If it's a one shot and it's like eight new players, there's almost no point when you could just do the same sort of game and get them interested first, and then and then they play something like D&D. But the other thing as well is actually the style of the games master you are, or the player that you are. You know, some players are very RP heavy. I know people that will not speak outside of character in their games. Like, it's really, really into it. And that's up to them, you know. But it's certainly not a style that if I'm running a game, I don't enforce that on people. Not everybody's comfortable with it. But if people want to do it, I'm more than happy for them to do it. As a GM, you might be somebody that would prefer these more serious games in terms of like more committed RP, if you want to call it that, or you might prefer just to have fun with it. You know, I do a lot of horror games, for example, but just because they're horror, it doesn't mean they can be light-hearted as well at points. Even scary bits can get that brevity after it or during it, just make people laugh. I think our Alien game might have had bits like that. Although it was a very brutal game, but it was pretty funny, especially when PCs are kicking other PCs into the arms of aliens.
And or locking them outside and watching them drift off into the void of space. That happening to the same player twice, but you know.
That's right. That's right. So that's what we mean by styles of plays. So I think maybe it might help if we just start talking about like what. Let's start with, what's your style of player first? Like, if you're playing a game, I mean, I know, I suppose, but I mean, what's your kind of preferred style of play if you have one?
Medium, and I'll explain that.
Not well done or anything.
So basically what I mean by that is that I don't particularly like doing a super 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 serious heavy RP type game, and I don't necessarily fully enjoy a completely light-hearted game. If I had to pick between the two of them, I would go for a light-hearted game over a super super deadly serious role-playing game. And the reason that I'm saying that is that, you know, not all the time you're wanting to, like, just totally, totally, totally switch off and kind of be really flexible. Sometimes you're wanting a bit, you know, like, you're wanting the story to be a bit more interesting to kind of grab you and to take you. So with that, you need, I think, a little bit more of the serious element rather than the comedy element. But chucking that in every now and then is all right. So that's what I would say, medium. Not too much of the RP, not too much of the comedy, not too serious, not too light-hearted, just a nice balance somewhere in the middle. Yeah.
How did you find Warhammer then? We played, I don't know how long ago it was now, we played Warhammer Wrath and Glory, Warhammer 40k Wrath and Glory, it's done by Cubicle 7, and that game is obviously one with an immense amount of lore and an immense amount of zealotry in it. But then it's slapstick to the point of, well, it's brutal to the point of being slapstick. So how did you actually find that, out of curiosity? Because I feel like it can do a bit of both, but it, I mean, I found it quite hard to, especially because, just for context, like, you don't know Warhammer, really. And, well, I don't really know it that much either, by the way. I just know enough.
Well, you read the book before.
I know enough about it to run at least that game, but certainly I'm much newer into the Warhammer lore, and I can see it being a festering disease that pulls you in, because I know people that play it are really into it. But for yourself, it's not something you've looked at a lot. So how did you find that then?
Yeah, so for context, we'd done a session zero. And we'd done three games, didn't we?
Four, including session zero.
Yeah, so a wee tiny micro game for zero, and then just three proper games. So for sessions zero to one, which is basically just the one game because of how small that little chunk at the end was, it was, I found it kind of difficult to be getting into. Now, in part, it was because there's the new system, there's a new sheet, whereas that, the, like, although you might understand what you're doing, you're still looking, going, is it there, is it there?
Can I translate?
And you're literally just looking for it, and then you go, oh, other side, and you find it or whatever. So for the first while, again, for the first full game, I was going to say stilted, but I don't mean that the way the game was or anything, like it was lacking pace or anything like that. It was just the kind of mechanical challenges that were there, as well as the fact that it's based on a lore that I don't have a great knowledge of and stuff. So you're trying to find your feet and you're trying to get into it. And then by the second game, because I was, you know, you're now starting to rely on memory and things, so it means that I'm having to spend less time thinking about what's in the sheet, where it is, what amount of dice to roll, and, you know, things like that. It then kind of let me sort of sink into the story a bit more. But also by games two to three, the way the game was, we were sent onto a planet, and it was, you've got a hazy memory, you don't really remember why you're there, you've found the message, you've read the message, and you're in kind of survival mode at this point, and you've not got a lot of problem solving to do other than,
what are we doing?
What are we doing? Don't get caught, and we should probably be heading over there.
Well, do you know the best bit about the whole don't get caught thing?
Yeah.
They would have just taken you to the main city, and you were all killing all the boats. It was, for those who might be interested, it's a graveyard shift, which is a free scenario that Cubicle 7 do. Totally recommend it. It's really, really good. I've run it a couple of times now. For one group who's very into Warhammer, so they kind of got past that initial. Because even we had another player there as well who didn't even realise Warhammer 40k was like sci-fi. She didn't realise until we started playing it, and she was like, wait, it's in space? And I was like, what? Not all the time, but yeah, there's a lot of space in 40k. That's how you get your space cathedrals or whatever, so, or your space hulks or whatever they're called. I don't even know what they are. It's heresy, I suppose. But anyway.
But yeah, so, and the other thing with the first kind of game is, because although it was a kind of semi-familiar group that we were playing it with. And although we'd done the session zero and we'd all built the characters at the same time, because you're kind of focused on what you're doing, you're kind of roughly aware of the other characters. So that first game, so the first proper game, meant that you were kind of trying to figure out who was best for doing what, and it kind of felt a wee bit that you were sort of getting in each other's road and kind of standing in each other's toes a little bit. And normally when that sort of situation happens, I'm the kind of person that will just take a step back, let everybody kind of run forward, and then go, right, okay, they're doing this, they're doing that, you know, and kind of analyse it, and then from that point go, right, okay, well, here's what I want to do, here's what I can do, and here's how I would slot into the group to make it more effective, or, you know, again, whatever reason that you're picking for what you're doing. So I kind of done a little bit of that in the first game as well, so it wasn't that I was disengaged, because, again, you're still involved and you're doing what you're doing, but it wasn't the way it was in the second and third games. So in the second and the third games, again, because everything was a bit more relaxed rather than you and try to figure things out too much, it then meant I gradually started to get into it a bit more. So by the second and the third game, then I was coming up with more creative problem solving rather than just kind of for the emperor hack and slash and go for it, to the point that I think I was giving you a headache here or there. And
can't think.
Can I not just jump in that and fly it? No, you can't do that. All right, okay.
The grenade was a headache. Killed half of my dudes. I didn't know the grenade drills. I'm like, do what? Just blow them up. Just throw the damage into it.
Yeah. So literally because there was a character portrait, you know, of like the boss that we were fighting. I went in with my character.
I was well seen. I never even noticed that. It's one of the character portraits. Like Jamie Sane had a frag grenade on it, and I went, so they do. It's like, I don't think they had it on their actual person, but I thought, oh, that's pretty cool though, so let's just do it.
So for context, I was playing as Katarius, and I had Magnum Matrix.
So
I went, can I just pull the pin out in that grenade?
And I was like, well, it makes sense.
And my whole argument for getting that to go through was, but it's in the picture. What's in the picture?
I know. I think they might have actually had. I was saying they might or not, but I think they might have in the end. I can't. Anyway, we ruled that it was there, even if they didn't, you know, because it was a good idea. Wrath and Glory, for those who don't know, it is very much for if you're a really cool sort of person. They talk about that a lot in the game, and you even get currency to add things like that if they're not there. So
pretty much from that point forward, because, again, it was semi-creative the way that it kind of came about, it then kind of led me down that path of thinking outside the box for things, and stole a book from a library, and, you know, lots and lots of kind of other things that I kind of wasn't really supposed to do. But from that point forward, because I started getting more familiar with it, and because of the kind of, like you're saying, a lot of people are really, really, really fanatical about 40K. And I think at least one of the people that we were playing with, not super, super, super fanatical, but really into the lore, so was going more into the role-playing side of things than most of the other people at the table, which then meant for me I could kind of peel it away from that a little bit into a realm that I wanted more with some of the kind of things that I was doing, you know. Throwing grenades about the place and whatnot.
Maybe that leads us on then. I'll talk about maybe what I'm like as a player. I think as a player, I'll come back to it. I think as a GM then, for my style and stuff, a lot of the time, especially if it's new games, I don't mind. I'm good doing heavy RP games and stuff. I do quite a lot, especially with some of the other games that I've got. I'm pointing as if you can see it back there. I've got a whole shelf of them. But I'm very much like, the thing is, I play with a lot of different groups and I run for a lot of different groups multiple times a week. So, you know, I've been able to just, like, I tend to be a bit more relaxed. Like, I had a year-long campaign restart and had 10 minutes to prep because of all this other stuff that got in the way before the game night. So I had 10 minutes before people arrived, but I'm very much not too worried about that sort of stuff because a lot of the time people don't even get through 5 bullet points depending on how big your party is. So for even with that sort of game, And I think I might have even said at the start, and I maybe said it about Alien, which I think we did not too long before. That was the last game I ran, at least before that. I don't know how many weeks it was before. But it's very much like we're learning the rules. This is a new game. There was stuff as well I just couldn't be bothered, frankly, looking up, because I felt sometimes I was in the book quite a lot. So I was just like, who cares? Let's just move it on. There was even things about injuries or re-rolling your crit fails or your fumbles and that on the raft dice, your ones and stuff, which I don't think, I can't even remember now if you can do or not do it now, but I was just like, just go ahead, I'll double check. It's like, let's just keep it light. And the thing is, over time, you can build yourself up as, you know, like if you want to do a serious game, you can do that later, you know, and certainly with Wrath and Glory, it was a new system for us. And even for me, I've ran it several times now. But when I was supposed to run it originally for us, I wasn't suggesting doing it then because I was running that game at the same time for others. So, but then we ended up being 6 or 7 weeks or something before we played it. So it was already out the window by the time we played it, other than the basics of your Wrath points. But even now, I couldn't even tell you what you can spend your points on. Because just there's all these little... It's not super complex, the base, but there's all these other rules in the system that just... It's a lot of stacking stuff in the game, so it does get a bit heavy on the maths. I mean, I'm saying heavy, it's just adding what dice pool you've got, but it's just in the heat of the moment, it can be a bit... You need to look at stuff. So when it comes to my GMing style, I tend to be... If it's games that we know well... You know, I try and encourage RP moments. We did it. Unfortunately, forced Jamie to roleplay his prayer to the Omnissiah. I had to try and explain it. I think I explained it. And then one of the other players, she'd asked about it. And I'd went, it doesn't matter. They're the same person. Just say the Omnissiah and the God Emperor is the same person. Because, I mean, I think I know what the difference is. But I don't care enough to mechanically rule it different. But I'm asking to pray to the Omnissiah and stuff. But the thing is, it's like... Jamie did a wee roleplay moment, and I was like, I can't even remember what he said, but it doesn't matter how good or bad it might have been. It was just a case of, cool, that does the job, move it on. We just encourage it and have fun with it. For me, I'm more about having fun. I do tend to stick to rules pretty closely, unless I don't know them, and then I just usually rule something in favour of players until I figure it out. But yeah, I tend to just keep it light. I mean, my games, a lot of them are pretty intense, some of them... usually quite violent because they're horror themed as well, but that doesn't mean that you have to be sitting in a sad headspace for it. You know, they tend to just have a bit of brevity, similar to Wrath and Glory or Warhammer, sorry, which is a very intense environment. To give you an example, they arrived on a planet with hundreds of thousands or potentially millions of dead people on it, so like literally rotten carcasses. So, you know, very intense start to a game, especially very intense introduction to the Warhammer lore, where they've got servo skulls and cherubs flying about, which if you know the lore, you know that what's involved in all of that. So, but yeah, I enjoyed the game itself, but I tend to try and keep it, you know, I do try and prioritise the fun elements over it. I don't tend to get, I hate the term GM stick, but I don't, whatever that nonsense is, I don't do it because I really don't like that attitude with the GMs. I know a couple that do it. So anyway, that's my GMing style. But what about yourself for your style, your GMing style? I'll maybe mention my player stuff later though.
Yeah, so I tend to stick kind of almost to the opposite of what I like to play. I tend to stick to things that are a bit more serious than fun, just purely and simply because like it's kind of like a referring to the manual kind of thing. So if I ever feel that I'm kind of drifting away or I'm starting to lose something, then I can quickly look at, again, notes that I've made of key events that I want to happen or, you know, other kind of pointers and things that I've got written down, and I've kind of got that safety blanket, I suppose, for want of a better term for it, that I can then go back and refer to. So I tend to like it being a bit more serious than lighthearted, but I don't go down the kind of serious and role-playing side of things. With the role-playing part of it, again, I kind of keep that sort of, not quite 50-50, but, you know, I keep it closer to just telling people what's happening rather than particularly going into character or anything, just purely and simply because I find that a bit more comfortable. and as well the difference between doing some RP as a character, as a player, rather than as a GM or DM or whatever, is that you're doing that one character that you've figured out how they talk and what sort of personality they have, if they're forceful, if they're not, you know, whatever. So once you figure that out, that's you're fine. You don't need to think about that anymore. You just do it. Whereas as a GM, then you need to go, right, well, this person is meek and is, you know, you've got all the detail about them, so you need to switch and do that. And then they go on to a different place and they're talking to somebody else. Then you need to switch and then you need to do that. So there's a lot of hopping about you need to do. And a lot of character changes that you'll need to do if you're doing it proper and if you're doing it to that sort of a level. So because of that, it tends to get kind of binned unless it's that character is vaguely similar to a character you've played, and then you can just kind of blur the edges a bit and then just kind of run with it. So that's sort of, in a nutshell, roughly the sort of gaming style that I would say.
I mean, even like I'd seen some of that happening with your recent games that you were doing as well. So, I mean, in terms of like myself as a player, I tend to just, I mean, because I play with a different, like, when I do play the games, the people that I play games with, like, for people that are running them, I mean, they tend to have their own little bits of style. Some of them prefer it more RP heavy, some of them are okay with a bit more of the kind of distance between player and character, you know, because sometimes people just say, I want to ask the guy this, yeah, instead of them role playing a conversation, which is fair enough. It means sometimes people just want to do that, and I think that should be fine if people want to do it that way. It's efficient. So if you're struggling for time, that might be a way to try and do it, keep your things to time. But I tend to be a bit more, I can play the different ones, I don't mind RP heavy or whatever, but I think generally I prefer to play games that, I prefer having the flexibility to be light. It could be a serious game, but I like to be able to be making things a bit more light at times. And that, I think most of that comes from I just do a lot of horror games, and a lot of them aren't always that pleasant. And I'm reading one right now that's quite intense. But certainly when I'm running it, it doesn't need to be as depressing as the game is setting it, unless people want that. But if the people that I know will be playing it, I think would prefer to, they like that subject matter, the kind of more oppressive environments. But, you know, it's always good, in my opinion, to shift that and offset it with a bit of lightness. And jokes are always a lot of fun with it. Certainly even movies do that, like It Part One, the remake they done, does a good job of, I mean, it feels more like a Goonies film to me than a horror film, because the Pennywise moments are really, like, they're like spooky and they're supposed to be scary and you're supposed to feel almost the omnipresence of Pennywise and Derry, but outside of that, the film's actually very funny and it's full of jokes. So, you know, it's an example of what I mean by it's not just a way to kind of keep the games, because the way I see them, games should be fun or entertaining, at least. So even if you're able to do that when you're running a game, you're allowing the scary moments to be scary and have those peaks, and then allowing people to relax. And just even from that point of view, I guess that's maybe more a filmmaking point of view or something. Certainly in game design, you do it a lot. Like actual playing PC games, sort of game design, I mean. I suppose it probably is done with a lot of RPGs as well. But anyway, that's my sort. I like serious games, particularly horror games. Like, I like spooky games and getting immersed in spooky environments. But I like to have flexibility, and not all GMs like it, where you can have a bit of a joke with your players outside the scary moments. I know that some people take it too far and they joke all the time when things are supposed to be scary, which might be a problem in itself. But certainly, I'm aware of that. I run a lot of games, so I'm aware not to do that when I'm playing games that are supposed to be spooky. But anyway, that's my sort of play style, I think I would say.
Yeah. And again, I think that's the thing as well, that if you're doing a horror game, then it needs to be serious. You know, you can't have it in the middle. It needs to be serious. Or if you're doing some form of comedy horror or whatever, where is a bigger focus in the comedy than the horror, then yeah, okay, it needs to kind of go to the other extreme as well. But.
Yeah, I mean, I've been running the Grindhouse collection that's done. I can't even remember the name. That's annoying, especially because I've ran it so much now. But they're pretty intense, a lot of them games. It's Grindhouse themed, so if you're familiar with that genre of film, usually super splattery, usually really intense subject matter. But we've played it, and it's actually been a blast. Like, the three or four times, I've just ran one of the games, but a few times, called The Hoodlums in it. It's one of the additional ones. It's pretty intense. It's pretty intense. There's a lot of violence in it. There's a lot of suggested themes in it that are kind of pretty unpleasant, especially if players are into exploring the world and looking in for that world building. There's a lot of stuff that suggests pretty unpleasant stuff. But even those games, like, I'm putting in moments for players to relieve some of that tension when they see something really horrible, or, oh man, there's so many good moments in that game. But but it doesn't mean that it makes the game not scary when you do it, you know. But what's nice about Grindhouse is you can run horror comedy if you prefer, because you can just do it more like a splatterhouse film, if you're if you know what those films are like. A lot of them are kind of almost like slapstick, like to the point of being so extreme that it is, you're kind of watching it for the entertainment of shock value, or for the shock value, I should say. In Splathouse, these Grindhouse games could be run like that if you want. It's more just a tone shift, but it's not that hard, especially if your players like to have fun and maybe are more prone to more light-hearted games or something fun. I said to them it'd be intense, and I just checked a couple of their potential trigger warnings for it, because there was a couple of things in it. You know, there's a couple of things. There's like violence against like kind of late teens or something, I think maybe mid to late teens. So you could say child violence if you're classing a child under 18. I think they're supposed to be about 16, 17, 18. So there's violence, to, like, they're playing these characters and you know, they might be getting hurt badly in the game or killed. Alien's the same, where you can be playing a child in it and you can definitely die in that game. There's a lot of player death in that game. It's very much a lot of insta-death waiting around the corner if you've got aliens in your game. So it's stuff like that. You want to check the trigger warnings, I suppose, as well. But certainly you can be, if you go for horror comedy, you can lighten it up and fuzzy it up a bit. You can smear that detail away if you need to, but... yeah, horror comedies. That's my favourite sort, though. Horror games my favourite, because I like all that stuff. But I think a lot of the time, I feel I fall back to comedy a bit, horror comedy, or at least allow those bits to come out. Just it relaxes people a bit, too. You know, you don't want people to come in, especially if they're new to a system, and think they need to be in the mindset of something horrible for 4 hours in one night.
Yeah. I mean, the thing as well is doing a comic bit or letting a laugh happen, it then... it can also throw people off. It can also relax them, which then means that when you do something to scare them or whatever, have somebody burst through a patio door or whatever, that it, you know, it takes them by surprise.
He says that because I did the final big bad evil guy in that Warhammer game. Was one of my relatives that came through the back door, and I was sitting texting them and all that, like, we're almost here, there was so much RP, and I'm like, this is great. I'm like, right, shut up guys, hurry up, I'm moving it along. So you going out? Yeah. And I summarise it before someone jumps in with more RP stuff. And then I was like, and I played this wee audio clip that the guy had sent, and they came through the back door. It was awesome. It was such a cool ending. I loved it. So it was a lot of fun. So yeah, it shocked everybody, and I was very glad that it worked. So, because that was something we were thinking about and took a lot of persuading, if I remember right. So, but yeah, so I think that's talking about our styles. I think we've maybe mentioned a wee bit about finding our styles and what we prefer. But is there anything like you've found, maybe especially with these recent games, like have you found or figured bits out about how you like to run games? Is there anything you've sussed that out from doing your recent games, if that makes sense?
Not really, no.
So from you running games, what have you found your preferences are for running your games as a result of actually running them? Have you found pieces or picked up pieces of that puzzle as you've ran games? Have you discovered your favourite or your preferred style running the games? Or have you had this pre-sussed and just ran your games and hoped that it was the style that you prefer?
A little bit of kind of that. So before, like, really doing anything, what I'd done was, like, just through playing games and things and just figuring out the stuff that you know, you enjoyed out of it, and going, right, well, I don't particularly like when this happens, I prefer this. And, you know, you see, you've got an idea of that, or at least I did, because I played however many things beforehand. And, I mean, one of the things that, like, through doing it, like I'd said before, was just, like, having a little set of bullet points to fall back on. Because then what it means is that if you ever find yourself lost, you've got little prompts to kind of get you back on the path again. Because one of the things that I find difficult when I'm sitting playing a game is when, like, the story stops.
Mm-hmm.
Not if, like, one character is heavily involved in doing something. So if they have been kidnapped from the group, just for picking something random off the top of my head, and you're following that character's journey through being taken captive. So the rest of the group isn't there because, you know, they're all asleep or, you know, whatever's happened. That I don't find particularly disengaging because the story's still ticking along, something's still happening, but it's if there's either indecision or something's to get checked via rules, or, you know, and there's like hitting the pause button and everything's stopped. That's the thing that I find the most disengaging part of it. So through doing the games, that's what I've always tried to kind of get a little bit better each time. And some, like, for the kind of the pause element of it, mm-hmm. like, if you are looking at the clock and you know you've only got, say you've only got 2 hours that you're there with everybody for playing, and you know you're getting closer and closer and closer to the point that you're going to have to stop, then figuring out the right time to end it so that you can then pick it up the next time rather than you're halfway through combat or whatever, because people are just going to forget. People are going to forget exactly what's happened, and, you know, if I get 10 arrows left, if I get mm-hmm. 18, you know, all that stuff is probably going to get mixed up. And again, having your little bullet points there is good because you can go, right, okay, well, I've done that. Thinking about doing this, but we've realistically only got 20 minutes left, and that will take longer than that, so let whatever RP elements are going on happen, and then just, you know, break it at that point, and then you can pick it up, and then you know exactly where to pick it up from as well, because you've got that reference. So each time that I'm doing it, I'm trying to get that. Ultimately, I'd like to not rely on that at some point, but yeah, I think even if I was at the point where I didn't need to rely on it, I would rather have it there and not look at it during a game than just throw it out the window and then get to a point and then suddenly go, I need my comfort blanket.
It's actually kind of interesting. Do you know, this kind of leads us on to, because really, you know, I've kind of mentioned how I've found with running a lot of games, I used to think, especially because it was the main man that runs a dwarf mm-hmm. game and that, he kind of set a style, or kind of, let's say standard, because it's not like it was like, you have to do it like this. It wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was almost like, okay, is that how we should probably be doing, like, fantasy games, for mm-hmm. example? Because that was something I'd not really played. I'd done a lot of Cthulhu before mm-hmm. we started playing. I say a lot, I'd probably done a dozen or two dozen games or something max in the previous years, like, before. But I kind of found overall, and I think I said this with Wrath and Glory as well, like, I don't know all the rules to this game, so, and part of it is, like, I do, it's similar about the rules. I don't want rules to hang up the game. Now, I think the reality is, if you're going to be playing different games and trialing new systems, it's going to happen, but either you as a GM can be making a wee rules call and then coming back to it, which is why I often, if I can't remember a rule, I tend to just make something that sounds about right. It's usually in favour of the player, usually. And then I'll check it out later or while they're working something out during your turn or something.
Yeah, have a quick double check.
But I mean, I'm happy. I think I've learned to just not be too worried about that sort of thing because it depended on your games. You know, if it's a Cthulhu or D&D game, it's not something that will be too much of an effect, you know. You know, if someone casts a spell, I don't know. I can just be like, that's cool. Tell me if they don't know what this, if I don't know what it is and they don't know what it is, I can say check that rule and we'll come back to you and we'll move on to another player and we'll keep things kind of moving that way. But I'm also okay, but there's a lot of games I'll maybe trial out with other people that maybe I can get for a couple hours. Just it's less organised and it's just people down the road and that. And we can test out games and do it like Warhammer. I think I ran for my brother and my dad. We did maybe about six games. Probably, and to see the first three or four, I don't think my head was out of that flaming rule book, you know. Now, that doesn't mean nothing was happening, but I was kind of like, yes, you do that, but this happens next, and trying to suss it out. But the thing is, if you tell people that before the game, then, you know...
Yeah, yeah, and again, I think we've said it before in different episodes and things. If you're there with a group, and it's, you know, more so people you know, and you're there and it's something new that you're trying, or you're in the middle of a game and something starts to go off the rails and it starts to go wrong, if they're not understanding of that, or if they get particularly upset about it, then you probably need to find a new group.
yeah, and that kind of leads me on. When I found just over time, like I prefer horror games, but a lot of the time I've got quite comfortable becoming a bit more adaptable. We're kind of moving into like figuring out your style and kind of advicey sort of stuff. But I think one thing that you're doing, like when you spoke about those the rules there, you know, that's something that I learned. Rather than saying, okay, let's hold the game up, I just adapted a wee bit to it. And now I'm quite happy. I'll run games. I mean, I was sitting running that one of those Grindhouse games. I'd literally had not read it like since I'd last ran it.
And don't break the magic.
But, I mean, the guys at the table clearly could see I was reading out of the book, you know, or reading out of my PDF. I had both. I had one page with stats were on my computer, and the book was here, and I'm narrating out it. I mean, I'm bringing in elements and responding to them. It's not just like I'm reading out of the book. But, you know, I'm quite happy to just run with what stuff comes, because, and if I don't know something, I'll just say that to them. And if there's something important, I'll come back to it. I try not to hold things up as a result. I've become very comfortable with being flexible with their party, depending on what they like. Some players don't like horror, but they want to do a Cthulhu game. So really, they want a puzzle game or a mystery game without any of the good stuff, in my opinion, from like Lovecraft kind of style games. I'm happy to be flexible, because I know other people like intense games. And Alien, the guys I ran that with, it was pretty intense the whole time, actually. Not yourselves, but certainly the other group. It was they wanted... But they're all obsessed with aliens, so instead of adding in the comedy bits I would have added, like the Game Over Man type stuff from Aliens, we focus right in Alien 1, trying to set that scene for them, turning off the lights, putting a lamp on in the middle of the room, and just going deep with all of that stuff. So I've learned one of the things, at least from me, is I've done a lot of games. So in terms of like sort of advice, if you're listening and trying to find your own style... You know, we're talking about all this. And we've done lots of games, either as players or GMs.
Yeah.
And I think the first thing to do is to start simple. Just start with a wee small game. And when I say a small game, I literally mean have like two events in your game and see if it lasts an hour. That's fine. Just let it last an hour. Because that's one of these things you'll learn. You'll just pick up things from running it. You'll see what you're comfortable with, what you're not comfortable with. And I think it's just part of it's repetition of that, and starting simple and then just doing it over and over again. There's a lot of material out there which maybe we'll touch on, like, but I think it's more important to actually find your own feet than it is to be taking stuff from others. Do you get any advice?
Yeah, I mean, again, talked about, you know, keeping things moving, and again, you'll just eventually, you'll find your feet with that side of things. But that, again, isn't so much about necessarily finding a particular style, but if you get yourself bogged down with detail, and you're stopping and you're thinking, then you're more likely to put yourself off doing another game because the momentum's getting killed, rather than just letting it happen, letting it go, and wherever it ends up is wherever it ends up, and then afterwards have a think about what's happened and what's went on. And again, that sort of leads into before you do anything as well, like, honestly figure out, like, what kind of person you are. You know, are you somebody that is naturally quite confident? Are you somebody that's, you know, a theatrical type person, in which case, well, when you're sitting and it comes character interaction, then yeah, okay, sure, go for RP, go down that road, see what happens, see how it goes. But if you are somebody who's moderately confident but not a total wallflower, or if you are a wallflower, probably it's going to be best to avoid RP elements and just go for descriptions and general kind of statements, because it can be quite interesting. It's maybe not the best word for it, but when you're a player and it's somebody new that's running something, and you've got your perception of them as a player, and then when it comes time for them sitting behind the screen, it's amazing how things can change and how things can shift. So normally, I would say, no matter who you are, kind of default more towards less RP, as that's probably going to help you keep things moving. That's probably going to get you a better experience.
I think there's nothing wrong as well. I think we said this, might have touched on it earlier, where I'm happy if people sit and go, oh, I ask this of the guy, or I try and persuade him to let us in, or whatever it is that you say. Whereas I know there's some GMs, it's like, oh, well, what do you say then? What do you say? And they force the RP, which is fair enough. There's nothing wrong with prompting, like, what is it you say? Because it helps the GM get an idea of what you're actually saying, so they know they might want to be setting a DC, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But I think if you're being a bit more conscious as a GM, you'll figure out if people are doing that because maybe they're not as comfortable with RP. Maybe they're not saying you're nervous doing it. It might just be you don't, maybe it's a new character, you know. I don't know what to say with my characters a lot of the time, so I just default to something. It usually sounds stupid, but I do a role anyway and see if it works. But even like with the Warhammer stuff, there was a whole sequence where the lore heavy guy who knows Warhammer lore, and I don't know it as much, and there's this kind of back and forth between the librarian, Mortem archivist, and their character, who's this Minasotan priest. And it's like, I mean, although this guy was, I think the priest was actually too, he was really close to total heresy, actually, with murdering innocents a lot of the time, because that was, he wasn't very Minasotan priest, as far as I understand them. There's Zealot, but they're not totally murderous. But with this character back and forward, we actually had a whole RP segment there, talking about slagging off his flagellant nature, is because I'm like, I don't need to do that. My love in the Emperor is so good, I don't need to prove it by superficial means, you know. And there was a good RP moment there, but normally that's probably, that maybe a couple minutes that took, is not something I'm normally on the ball about, just because I don't do that a lot, especially with characters that, you know, maybe it's a barbarian, or maybe it's some warlock, or, you know, it might be a class that I don't play and I don't know the character well, so I can't do stuff like that. So definitely, there's nothing wrong with this. Give it a go. Just do wee bits of RP, I would say, and then find your feet with it, because it's not everybody's jam either, and that's okay. You don't have to roleplay. And I think as a GM, I think you should maybe facilitate it for both people as well, both sorts of players. I know you might want a serious game, but I think the reality is, if you're looking around the table and players aren't taking 100% serious, or they're wanting to maybe do more jokey stuff a lot of the time, then I think you need to try and be a wee bit adaptable about it. Because your default might be you want an RP heavy game, but you'll always find people that want to do that at some point, whether you ask online or go to a comic shop. But you know, I think when it comes to being a player, it's just start with trying out stuff that you're comfortable with. Like, if you prefer horror games, or so even if, sorry, if you're running games as well, if you prefer horror, look into horror games. If you like fantasy, look into some fantasy games. But if you like kind of dark fantasy games, then you don't have to play D&D. You know, if you want to get into these sort of systems, you can check the quick start rules, which I think pretty much most bigger games you can get the quick start rules for free. So just try out a couple different games. Try and just expand your horizons a bit, because a lot of people, this is a big monopoly really. If you're looking at horror, a lot of the time people just say do Cthulhu. It's a really bloody good system. But don't just do that. If you just try out a couple of systems. If you want to do a space RPG, I've used Cthulhu for space RPGs, but I've also done Alien for it, and I think they do stress better, especially in that sci-fi horror setting. It's really good for that particular setting, Alien, that is, and it's dead easy to pick up. But if you like dark fantasy games, you've got things like D&D or Pathfinder has a lot of campaigns that, you know, you've got gothic horror or gothic fantasy with Curse of Strahd. But Pathfinder has a bunch of really good resources, and they've done a few Humble Bundles recently where you can get the core rule books and stuff. It's like £20 or £25, and you're getting all these systems and scenarios and things. Really, really good. Or even, I would definitely recommend, if you want a simpler system to pick up, you've got Morkborg, which is awesome. Such a good, it's super brutal, but it's awesome. It's dead funny. It's more about fun, less about having these overpowered characters, and more about just trying to survive the brutality of the apocalypse with really disturbing PCs, most of them. So yeah, I'd definitely say try out different games as much as you can, because I think it just makes you a better GM as well. I think the exposure to different systems, you pick up things from them. For example, the Cult Divinity Lost game, it's very narrative-focused. It's nothing like any other role-playing game I've ever played. But I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from Alien about just stop rolling constantly, you know. They discourage it almost, the way the system is with their panic system. So, yeah, I would definitely recommend trying out different systems, and you'll find one that you prefer the most, and especially if it's a rules-light system like Morkborg, it's dead easy to get people into it. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, ultimately with everything that we've talked about and things, the kind of best piece of advice is going to be the Nike method. Just do it, you know, because regardless of what you're thinking or what you're planning, if it's your first time or you're still relatively new, and it's probably going to pan out absolutely nothing like the way that you think or the way that we've talked about things happening with us. And you'll just need to kind of go on the journey and see where it takes you and see what happens. And it will evolve through time, through, again, just repetition. You'll find things that will work better for you. You'll find things that work better for a particular group, and that then may influence what your kind of default base style is going to be moving forward.
Yeah, totally, because you get people that are like voracious note takers as players. I know GMs that they need 2 months to prep a game, and I think that's at the point where it's like, oh, I think you should maybe just chill out a bit with your game. Now, that's maybe just my opinion, but a lot of the time, you're not getting through most of their content. So there's no point. Maybe it's because I don't have I struggle with time throughout the week and the games that I play. I do a lot of games during the week, but I don't have time to prep most of them because I'm just too busy to do it. I just make time for games because it's like 3-4 hours max, and a lot of them that I do, it tends to only be a couple of hours if it's during the week, maybe 3 at a push. So... But it's just worth trying it. And I think that actually takes us on to like maybe pitfalls to maybe avoid. It's maybe not so much like if you do it, it's really bad. But I think it's just stuff that I've seen people fall into a trap of... Do you want to start actually? Because mine's could take a second.
Well, the kind of biggest... It's probably a couple of pitfalls that are similar, to me, are slightly different, which is just being a straight-up copycat.
Okay, yeah.
And then the other one, which is going down the, you know, my way's the right way, which is taking somebody else's interpretation, and that's the key word here, interpretation of rules as gospel and totally concrete and correct.
Do you know, that actually makes me think, because that My Way thing, there's also a kind of third part, kind of these two, that, where it's like you're being inflexible, because I spoke about being flexible with people. I think a pitfall that you will find is, I know a particular one person in particular who I've only ever played a handful of games with, but it's very much if you don't play the game that they want you to do, which is like RP heavy and like this and like that and like the next thing, it's very specific style that they want. It's like you're actually actively punished for it, you know, for whatever reason, or you don't tend to get rewards. You might not even level up if you don't do a sufficient enough of role play and stuff. And it's just super weird. But I've spoke to different people in the group separately and said, like, let's not talk about this to each other. I've just said privately, what do you think? And a lot of people might have a kind of, and I know they've spoke to each other now for it, because I think they've said something to the guy. I don't know yet. I'll find out when I see them very, very soon. But it's definitely a case where people are like, they just want to chill out and play a game. Like, we're not worried about needing to take massive amounts of notes. We're here just to do a couple of encounters, have some fun. And I'm pretty sure this has been communicated to the guy, the GM, I mean. So certainly that's one of the things I would try and avoid. That doesn't mean that your style's something wrong if people want to do something different, but groups of players might want different types of games.
Yeah,
our games tend to be a bit more serious or more RP focused and all of that stuff. But other guys that I've spoke about plenty of times before, they just want to come out and hang out with their pals and get some drinks. That's really what they're coming to. It's D&D is just the event to bring us all together to socialise. So those games, I know that there's people maybe that we play with that would not enjoy these games that I do. They just wouldn't enjoy them because it's not what they're looking for in a game. Yeah. And that's okay. But that means if you're running games for these people, the groups, these different groups, you need to be aware of these differences and what they're looking for. And I think a lot of the time I get this mentality of stop over prepping all the time and spending 2 months prepping a 3 week game. You know, just I don't see the point in that because of the groups I play with. I think the over prep stuff's it's a problem I had. So I've kind of went to swing it the other way. And sometimes I don't have detail and I'll go, I'll get back to you on that because I actually don't know. Or you don't know yet, but you can study it. But that's code for me to go, I don't know yet, but I'll tell you later on once I have a think.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing with like the rules and sticking to the rules and being inflexible and taking, and again, I don't particularly want to mention particular people or anything, because
it's because it's me. That's why.
Well, apart from that, but you know, there's people out there that give great advice, and they've got a lot of experience, and that's what they're doing. It's advice. It's not like this is the way to do it. And the danger is that somebody goes and does it to that letter and isn't flexible, but also like from that point of view in terms of developing your own style for running a game, then rather than you going out and making your own mistakes and seeing how that pans out, or rather than you go out and you do something that's a major hit and major success, that starts to kind of limit, and you start to kind of force yourself down one path that isn't necessarily you and again what you're like, which is why going back to just doing it, just going out and doing it, although we've said about, you know, keep things simple and, you know, don't give yourself too much to stress and worry about, the main thing is just going out and doing it yourself and seeing what happens.
Yeah, because when we say keep it simple, that level, especially if you played a lot of games before you run a game, you know, that level of simple may be different for others. So you'll know if it's more than what you can handle if you're sitting there tearing your hair out behind a screen and nobody understands what's going on because it's not clear. I mean, you'll learn from these bad experiences, but it's always worth just setting that scene. Like even as for Warhammer and Alien, I'm going, this is, I've barely run these. Well, I've run Alien quite a bit, I think, before. But, you know, we're just going to be learning this as we go. So we might have issues with rules and pausing and things. But the reality is most people will be okay, especially if you're new to running a game. They're going to be all right with it. And if they're not, then maybe they're not actually into role-playing games anyway. I mean, I'm happy sitting there and watching a new GM struggle through it and not having a clue what they're doing. I'm happy to sit there and just wait for them and help them out if they ask for help or if they want the help, or just giving them the time to do what they need to do to sort things out. Because, you know, because what's the problem? People aren't going to be running games if they don't get that chance to mess up and fumble and do all of that. So, mm-hmm. And there's guys I know that stress out really bad, and I said to them after one game, it was a good game. You just need to relax when it comes to getting mm-hmm. stressed out over small like rules issues. They just didn't know a couple of rules, and it was proper stressing them out at the table.
Yeah,
I'm just like, just call it. I know someone that's so in their own head about me and someone did a kind of breakdown of that game with them, and we did a wee trial game. I wouldn't mm-hmm. say what the game is or anything, but they get so frustrated, and we stopped the game early because of it. Because like, I can't be bothered doing any more of this. It stressed mm-hmm. me out. I'm just like, well, that's okay, but don't just be more narrative. Just what makes sense narratively, and make a rules call, or just yep. allow it to happen and get it over with.
Yep.
But people need that space to try it. So unless mm-hmm. you're doing it, you know, some people might be okay going in with a maybe mini campaign as a first ever game. Some people might need to start with a basic, like half of a one shot, you know. Just start somewhere. I would say start as small as you can go first. Like, do a one shot, and it'll probably be more than one shot, a one shot game, because you don't know how to pace your games, or you don't know how to plan your games, or don't know how long puzzles might take a group of six players to do. But unless you start trying it, then, you know, even
you won't know.
Better advice in keeping it simple is just getting it done in the first place. So, and eventually you'll get your own style. So
yeah, and then flipping over to just copying somebody else's style. Well, that's not your style. That's not you, and it's as simple as that. And if you see something that somebody else is doing, whether it's at your table or whether it's something you've seen online or wherever, and there might be elements of what somebody else is doing that you might want to do, and there might be elements of something that somebody else is doing that fits with you, your personality, your style, the way you think about things, but it's probably not going to be 100%. I can pretty much guarantee it's not going to be 100%. And again, going back to some of the advice that we gave as well as trying different games out so that you're seeing different systems, try and see other people running games as well, because there might be somebody there that does something that you never thought about that suits you, that you can then incorporate for yourself. But trying not to just lift from other people. If it's your first time and you're doing it, then rather than what I try and do with a little bit of bullet points to fall back on, then there might be narrative things that somebody else does that you might have on a little list that you can fall back on, or that you've got committed to your memory, because again, it happened and it was exciting, or it was funny, or, you know, whatever it done that helped the situation at that point. Again, that's an all right thing to do, but try and avoid just the kind of the copy paste element of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with what Jamie's saying, with like, if people have got their advice videos out there's nothing wrong with taking some notes and doing them. And even if you're completely new and you don't know where to start, I understand where people emulate other people for. If you're going to do stuff mm-hmm. like that, I think it's worth just being like, you're not trying to be that person, because certainly you're probably going to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be mentioning it, is the Matt Mercer effect, which was a huge issue I'd heard, I'd seen at various points, not recently, but maybe mm-hmm. a while back, about everybody, especially maybe people that had watched Critical Role, and or maybe that wave of people coming into the system or coming into the game or the hobby, and they were expecting that sort of level of game. And now there will be absolutely GMs that expect their games to be like that. But the reality is, these guys have a lot of money for production. They're all professional voice actors, you know, actors, not just voice actors. So, because, I mean, they do the show, so you could class that as acting. So, you know, this is a business that they run, and it's a very good one, and they make amazing content. But I think Matt Mercer said himself, it's one of these things where... I think he even talks about just doing it your own way. There's nothing wrong with taking things you like from it, but even if you were to try and emulate that and build your own style from it, there's a difference between trialing different things you've seen other people do versus just wanting to be that person and replicate them. I think that way you'll probably find you might get the wrong crowd of people. Because you might be attracting the people that want that sort of level of production or, you know, immersion in their games and lore. I know the guy that I talked about takes 2 months to prep games. He's absolutely in that camp. And I mean, even it's not the same guy, but there's someone I know that he wants everyone to bring computers with them all the time so they can all do the Foundry virtual tabletop. And he spends ages setting it all up. But half the time, and it's a really cool system. Like, it's really, really cool. But it makes it more complex for the game when inevitably the issues come up with just either the setup of the tabletop, virtual tabletop, or just the players trying to figure out what the hell they push. So, and it's a cool system, don't get me wrong. I just don't think we need that complexity for a little Monday night game, you know.
Yeah.
Although it does elevate it when it works, but at other times it's not. And I bet you, and I'm guessing that this is a big stress point for the guy when he goes to run a game, when the reality is we could actually do with Theatre of the Mind combat, which I even do in D&D all the time. So whereas if you're maybe trying to replicate a Critical Role situation, you'd want all the music and the lights. And I've tried light stuff, but smart lights look terrible in my lamp, so binned it. But they've got big voices, they've got big deep backstories with intertwining campaign themes and all of that stuff. You know, and I mean, certainly I wouldn't be wanting to replicate that as a new player or a new GM. That's a huge, immense amount of work. I think the last thing to say about people like that too, that maybe have successful channels that give all their advice, and none of it, I think the stuff that I've seen from a lot of these guys, none of it's like terrible advice at all. I don't think there's any bad advice I've seen in most of them, but it's their situation. That's the thing they've learned, and I think it's important that you do that too.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just... You'll probably always be perpetually disappointed in your own games because you're not having the impact. Like, if you look at Critical Role, they all scream at the camera and start crying and hugging each other. Now, how much of that's for the actual the channel, the show, the drama for it is one argument, but maybe they're just really into it. But then they've done it for 30 or whatever it is years, they've done it, and they're lifelong pals basically. So it's even a different dynamic there. So I've seen people say, oh, it's all scripted and all that nonsense. It doesn't matter if it's scripted or not. They've been doing it a long, long, long time and they've made a business out of it that does very, very well and makes a bunch of amazing content. And I think this is where pulling away from trying to just replicate these successful people, I don't just mean Critical Role anymore. There's a whole bunch of really great kind of producers of content for this space. A lot of amazing, there's people that I've watched that are just hysterical. I'm in knots every time I watch them, but they run a business and they're really, really bloody good at running games. And I'm not going to try and replicate these guys or Critical Role or whoever else that is out there, because I don't feel like I need to. I mean, it's a game at the end of the day, so, and I run the games I like to run. And I know a lot of the guys that I run or watch, or I've watched their content, a lot of them probably wouldn't touch some of the content that I go near because it might not be suitable for their channel, you know. Cult Divinity Lost, some of those games are probably not very advertiser-friendly, I think is the nice way to put it. Anyway, I think it's just worth just bearing that in mind. It's not that we're saying, you know, don't listen, don't take notes from these guys, don't listen to their advice, and don't even emulate. I think it's worth trying out different things that they might do. You might want to try putting on music. I can barely play a game without music because I just hate the total silence as well, because sometimes when you players, they get a bit like, should I say something? And I'm comfortable with silence at the table, but not everyone is, so I just put on a backdrop of music, and it lets people even discuss stuff, and they can not interrupt others that way. Just if you're taking that advice or trying to emulate different pieces of it, do it on your terms and then just keep doing it. And don't be ashamed of doing your own style.
And ultimately, just quickly with that, that bit you're talking about with the music, what made you first realise that or do that with the music?
What, the silence?
Yeah.
Mostly, I never done it with music most of the time. And even now, Warhammer had lots of music, but that's just because I couldn't find ambience. It wasn't gunfire and stuff. But I tend to put ambient background noise mostly because, I'm going to be honest, I sometimes, and I do a lot of narrative pieces and try and describe a lot of stuff, but sometimes I just can't be bothered going over the same details. And I found sound was a good way for me to describe the weather and the theme and the kind of ambience of the scene just by putting on a wee soundtrack. And I could say, oh yes, it's raining, but people know when it's raining and they hear thunder. They've got an idea of some gothic, if it's Strad, which I use a lot of background noise for, you know, they can already imagine the full moon with the silhouette of the tower of a castle and a vampire flying off the top of it when you've got little ambient background noise and a wee bit of thunder and lightning and stuff.
Yeah,
I just purely do it because it helps just reinforce where your people are. If you're inside a smoking lounge in a campaign, you might want to put on smoking lounge ambience or speakeasy ambience. It tells people, they know that there's people there. It does less work for me from the narrative side, and that's why I got into doing a lot of the background noise. And then I found so much amazing background music that's out there. There's a lot of free stuff out there that's so good, and it really helps, I think, just elevate the game a wee bit for intensity.
What I was meaning though is that because you've seen somebody else doing it and you lifted it, or because you yourself were in a game and you went, it's a bit silent, it's a bit uncomfortable, that's what
I'm going to be honest, I don't know. I was doing this, I ran quite a few games before I'd watched like Critical Role and stuff like that, and I know they'll have music for battles and things, so maybe that was part of the influence, but I'm sure I might have been doing it before then, I'm not 100% sure. But certainly a factor was when I'm sitting in games and I've had players that they're not engaged, they just don't like to be the person coming in with all these opinions. They tend to sit back until everyone else has spoke, and then you say, what do you want to do? And then they'll tell you. So, and I found, like, sometimes say, what do you guys want to do? And especially during COVID, which is when I started looking into music and streaming that through Roll20, because that was one of the functionalities of Roll20, and I wanted to try it. And I found it helped, at least for me, get through when I was still funny about awkward silences. I was like, oh. But I've been in a lot of games where there's a lot of awkward silences, and I was like, oh, I can't stand it. It just, at that time, I was a bit uncomfortable with awkward silences. Not so much now, but it's probably a bit of both. Because I don't know the time scale for it. I just feel like I've done it most of the time I've run games, but who knows is the answer.
Yeah. No, it's just that, well, we were talking about it. Yeah. I know for me, like, any time I've used music, it's because I've seen other people do it. And I went, it's decent.
I've probably done a bit of both. I mean, because it does elevate it. I've actually had people do, and I think it's, I don't know if it's other players or if it's people I've watched, like, sorry, other GMs that I've played games with, or that I've watched online, but I've seen, in all there was a channel I seen doing it, and I thought, I actually like that, because you don't need the battle maps. It's a channel called Dungeon Musings, who just do their own, play a whole bunch of different games, but sometimes they'll just have, is it them, or is it the other guy, I can't remember the other channel name, but a lot of the time they just have a picture for the scene. They use battle maps, but sometimes they literally just have a picture of a scene. So sometimes I might hook up my other screen and just put a scene picture, and it helps me with narrative because it just puts the picture in your head, you know, rather than me needing to describe every single location you go to. But that was just something that I picked up. I'm like, that's pretty cool. I like that idea. It saves me some work, really. Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of setup involved, but a lot of the games I run for more than one group. So
once it's done, it's there.
Yeah, so there's definitely things I picked up watching people, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you've not made your own style. It just, you're always going to pick up tools and techniques that work really well. So, and even running initiative, sometimes I'm just like, man, I cannot be bothered rolling initiative. It's like, players go first and all my guys go first. I learned that from other games. It's just as easy.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I think that's probably all of our stuff about finding your style, and or just some advice, a couple of just things. Certainly when it comes to the pitfalls, specifically what we mean is just not getting in the trap and like in your head about, oh, we need to be these big people because that's what they've said. You'll be picking the things that work, and I think these people that give guidance from like YouTube about how to run games or how to be a good player, a lot of that times that's like an ideal game situation, that's an ideal environment. But I think these people will admit as well that not every game's going to have that perfect environment. Sometimes you might have difficulty with certain players, or who knows, but these are kind of like good what's the word? It's just good practices, and obviously depending on your games or your own style, it'll suit you better or not. Some people like to write their scripts before a game. Mm-hmm. I don't. I just don't have the time for it, quite frankly. So, but it doesn't work for me, but it might work for you, you know. So, but if it did, that's okay. So, but yes, yeah, so that's basically some of our things. It's maybe how we got our own styles or what we think our styles are like, and maybe some a bit of advice on it too. So,
yep. Yeah, and again, remember, anything that we ever talk to you about is
it's
only
law.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't do it, then just unsubscribe, go away, don't come back. No, but in all seriousness, it's only ever, I don't even know if it goes far as to say it's advice rather than a pointer. Do you know what I mean? That's the way at least I see it, that it's not that we're try to steer you in a particular path, that we're just going, this has happened to us and this is how something resolved, or this is how this came about and it's worked in okay. You know, it's just talking about experience rather than try to force anybody in a direction or a path. And if there's anything you pick up from it and use, great. If there's anything that you've picked up elsewhere and you've used, great. But the thing with this is that when you're trying to find your own style, you need to go out there and you need to figure out what that is rather than what somebody else is saying and what somebody else is doing. You might incorporate it and it might become part of your style, but make sure it's you. Don't fall in the trap of becoming somebody else.
I would also say then, on kind of to wrap all of this stuff up, then if you've, it would be interesting to hear your point of view, especially with some of the stuff we've said, because I know that there's people that if you say, oh, don't, we've kind of, we've said like, oh, well, you follow the rules, maybe somebody gives you a how-to video on how to do it, and because we've done some, but I think we've been quite clear that it's purely just our just experiences of it. And a lot of the time, I think these people that make these videos are also saying that, but people hold it as gospel a lot of the time. Especially the Matt Mercer effect, clearly dubbed that way because people took this very, very successful show and tried to replicate it, and then players were expecting it as well. And all of that's just a problem with expectations, actually, which we've spoke about before. So, but certainly we'd be curious to hear your style or any kind of rebuttals to anything we might have said. I'd be surprised. I don't think we've said anything purely offensive, at least not yet, but maybe we have. So I guess we'll know when people are actually getting comments. And you can do that by, it would be YouTube. If you liked, I'd say drop us a wee like. There's also Instagram. We've got a Discord. Can you do comments on Spotify? I can't even remember. Oh, there'll be Q&As probably on Spotify. I think that's everything.
Twitter, Facebook.
See, I don't do socials normally, so you know, you can tell. But definitely let us know on whatever platform that you're finding us on, because it's certainly something we're interested in, and maybe we'll pick up a thing or two from what people have to say.
Yeah, and again, like we've said before, it's as much about us hearing what other people think and are doing as for us trying to help newer players and GMs and things out by giving pointers and things. So please do.
Yeah, cool. And I think then that's us for this week's episode. So I just want to thank you for listening and or watching, and it's bye from me.
And bye from me as well.